and welcome to NL Full Time. It's just a trio today, and it's the three most regular pundits on NL Full Time. I'm Rob Worrell. Joining me, top of my screen, so I'll go with him first, Richard Wharton, otherwise known as Dickie.
Good afternoon, Rob. Really good to see you. And the sun's out. We're a bit better lit than we normally are.
Yeah, we could. Is this perhaps our first pod of spring? I know when we made one midweek in Swansea, it most definitely wasn't spring. And somebody was there with me, and that's a separate podcast, listeners, if you missed it, England C in Wales, which is packed with audio. I think we've got about five or six different guests. We were busy, weren't we, Joe Pope?
Yeah, hi, thanks for having me on again, Rob and Dickie. And yeah, I was on commentary yesterday, so I kind of lost my voice a little bit. It wasn't that exciting, but seemed to have got to a bit of a husky voice, but we'll plough on.
You can be our star boy this week, Joe. To be fair, you made the trip to Wales and back with me. Admittedly, I hogged all the interviews. Sorry about that. But you've absolutely covered yourself in glory this weekend, because whilst I failed to pick up any audio from Solihull Moors, which was shameful of me yesterday, you went hunting for audio from Wealdstone and Kidderminster, a game you went to. Unfortunately, you missed out on the Kidderminster lads, but you made up for it with two players from Wealdstone that we'll hear from a little bit later in the programme. So well done, Joe. And while we're giving out the congratulations, I guess we should really give some to the Spirites, to Chesterfield, who after 6 years got what's becoming a little bit of a catchphrase now from TNT Sports commentator Adam Summerton. Back to the Football League they go. And, well, Joe, let's start with yourself. I don't want to take anything away from Chesterfield at all. It's a tremendous achievement, but in a way it's a bit bizarre because we've all known it's been coming for so long.
Yeah, we all knew it was going to happen. Just a case of when. Obviously, they missed the chance in midweek to do so. Jamie Grimes, obviously, pulled out of England C selection to try and get them over the line on Tuesday night. And he actually got them over the line on Saturday. By far the pick of the players, scored the first goal, I believe. Obviously, clean sheet, lifted the trophy as well. And yeah, we all knew it was coming. But, you know, after that little hiccup in midweek, there was perhaps the odd question of, are they going to have a little wobble? But as they've done throughout the whole season, they didn't. And yeah, worthy champions. And it just goes to show, you know, how well they managed to bounce back from Wembley. You know, we've seen two teams go to Wembley and lose, one of them being my own team, who's since bounced back and got relegated. So yeah, really, really good season for Chesterfield and deserved champions.
Yeah, I concur with all of that. Dickie, we noted there Jamie Grimes on the score sheet twice. He was he poached one of them. I think it might have been going in anyway. I want to give congratulations to Armando Dober as well. I think this season has just shown what a great footballer he is. And certainly in the games I saw, a little bit less of the play acting, a little bit more of the quality. But it's amazing. I mean, all levels of football, Dickie, particularly I'm thinking of one or two of the Premiership victories in recent years as well, how the captains tend to come to the fore on the big day when they get them across the line.
Yeah, Jamie Grimes certainly did that yesterday, putting Chesterfield into the lead in the first half and then capping it off with the third goal in the second half as well. I don't know, maybe I've got Tony Adams comes to mind. I'm just thinking of that goal against, I think it was Everton, when Arsenal sealed the title a good many years ago now, 4-0, and I think he popped up in the area with a great finish. But anyway, enough about him. It's Chesterfield we want to talk about. And yeah, it's fully deserved. I remember speaking to Jamie Grimes after a playoff semi-final defeat 2 years ago against Solihull Moors. So they had that disappointment last year to the final. Disappointment again, but they've clearly used this as fuel for you know this season, and they've really left nothing to chance this season, to be perfectly honest. They've thrown a lot at it, but it's absolutely worked, and it It great to see them do it at home as well. I mean, if I'm sure I know an awful lot of fans travel to Halifax, obviously hoping to see the job get done there, but somehow it's kind of fitting that it gets done at home, where there are more fans there, and I guess people can just enjoy it that little bit more.
Yeah, just picking up on a couple of those points, Dickie. Vincent Kompany's the one I always think of, thumping in, yeah, centre back as well, but thumping in that brilliant goal to seal the deal for Manchester City. Yeah, terrific following of Chesterfield, 2,700, I think, in the week that went to Halifax. Personally, like other teams that are chasing the playoffs, I was quite annoyed with them for succumbing so heavily to FC Halifax Town, who are on a cracking run. It was on Wednesday, and yeah, FC Halifax Town on the back of, I think, three straight defeats, been on a run of something like six wins in seven now, and kept themselves in the playoff picture, only to be frustrated on Saturday that the damage probably caused by playing a game that ordinarily wouldn't have gone ahead on Wednesday to their pitch meant that they couldn't host Ebbsfleet. But yeah, I think one of the most bizarre things about Chesterfield winning the league by 20 whatever points that they do is that it's happened in a season when the rest of the league is so ridiculously close. You've only just now got two, maybe three teams that can look at the table and say, well, maybe, do you know what? They're not going to compete for the playoffs and they should be okay from relegation. But up until probably yesterday's games, Joe, everybody was involved in something, weren't they?
Yeah, and I think to some extent, most teams still are. Yeah, it's just a really, really good league. Always gets stronger. And even with Chesterfield gone next season, I'm sure it will still be a really, really strong league. So, yeah, obviously lots more to decide. I mean, we'll talk about the relegation battle, which keeps getting closer and closer, and the race for the playoffs as well.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be a lot of eyes probably on Chesterfield over the coming weeks, where, let's be honest, they're perfectly entitled to try and experiment whatever they want, really. But I think they do have, and I can't think of the phrase, they have a certain duty, don't they, to can still be competitive, because they're going to be in their final five or six games, they're going to be playing against teams who are either fighting for playoffs or fighting for to avoid relegation. So I'm sure under Paul Cook they will be as competitive as they reasonably can. In a way, you know, it might be better if the Wrexham record was still doable, but it's not, is it? The most that they can get now is 110 points, and you know, that's a ridiculous statement in itself. I mean, you go back 10, 12 years, and the record was 101, 103, then 105, and it is rather bizarre. Let's look at the chasing pack then. There's been a little pack of two that sat second and third for a while in Bromley and Barnet, and we all know just how crucial that second and third place is. You miss out a round in the playoffs and you have one home tie to get to Wembley. Now, it's fair to say that in the last couple of months, Barnet and Bromley have had their moments where they've stuttered a little. But something's happened over the last week or two at Barnet. They've got their key players back. They've got their captain back, Gorman. They've got their goalkeeper back, Laurie Walker. They've got their star man up front back, Kabamba. And boy, did they take it out on Dorking Wanderers on Saturday. A 6-0 win for them. And actually pulled clear of Bromley, who we'll focus on in a minute. And it's very difficult to see anybody wrestling one of those top three places away from Barnet now, Joe.
Certainly from Barnet, yeah. You know, as you said, they did have a little wobble, and they had that little wobble last season at this time. But they look back on track, playing really, really well. And as you say, yesterday put Dorking to the sword. I think, you know, I think I said a couple of pods ago that Dean Brennan likes to just throw the odd curveball in. You know, he can go all going well, and then he changes something when he perhaps doesn't need to. Obviously, with Laurie Walker last year, he chucked Harry Smith in alongside Nicky Kabamba. Well, yesterday he changed from having played a back three all season to a back four, and I think after that he might be playing a back four a little more. So yeah, really good win, and Yeah, they look the pick of the rest.
Listen to Mark White's post-match interview, quite apart from calling everything honestly, as he always does, and calling out a few individual players on this particular occasion. He was really, really thrown by Barnet playing a four. He said they'd only done it two or three times all season, and they hadn't really prepared for that or got the right personnel to switch. So he said that was a huge factor, but also individual errors and just needless yellow cards. And some managers, of course, let players play on, don't they, on yellow cards? But Mark White's got a little bit of a history, certainly with certain players. Joe Cook, we'd have to single out. He's picked up a lot of first half yellow cards, but Barnet, they really did put them to the sword, and things are looking very difficult for Dorking at the other end. We'll focus on the other end of the table in more detail in just a bit. But coming on to the other one of those two teams, and I think they still are catchable by the teams perhaps in fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh place at the moment, and that's Bromley. And I've had a feeling that they've been treading water for a while, and it's backed up by these stats. In the last 13 games, they've won just three. They've drawn six and they've lost four. And they lost almost inexplicably 2-0 at home to York City, who Adam, for Adam Hinshelwood, Dickie, just coming to you on this one, Adam Hinshelwood, what a difference he's started to make now. I think they got a clean sheet early on under his tenure, and then they got whipped six by Altrincham, didn't they? Since then, they've beaten two playoff hopefuls in Bromley and Aldershot without conceding a goal.
Yeah, I think it's those clean sheets that's the really interesting factor in there. I mean, I know Joe, you've spoken about Adam Hinshelwood and the way he likes, or he certainly liked his Worthing side to play. And I remember you using the phrase "expect chaos." There certainly was chaos earlier on, but it looks as though the York squad and Adam Hinshelwood have come to, they got to grips with this idea of where they are and what they need. And that rather than, potentially, just carrying on blindly with something, that they've added some defensive solidity in those last two games, and it's worked. Whether there was a little bit, I had a look. You just mentioned Bromley there, and I've just looked at Bromley's record. And when they go head to head against the other sides, I mean, they came out victors in that trophy game against Barnet. They did defeat Chesterfield. They're a good team when they go into those head to heads, but it's when they've been up against lesser opposition that their concentration just seems to have slipped a little bit. You'd kind of think if they do get to the playoffs, and they surely will in some position or other, that, hopefully that they'll be able to flick that switch and be back on it. But momentum's such a big thing in football, isn't it? And somebody else who's on the upward curve at just the time that they're not quite on theirs, meet them on the wrong day, and that's it. It's all over. The 46 game season can count for nothing.
Absolutely. Joe, anything you want to add on Bromley? I infer from what you said about Barnet a couple of minutes ago that you didn't think Barnet were catchable, that you do feel Bromley are.
Yeah, I do feel Bromley are. I think that's we were discussing it yesterday at half time in the game at Wealdstone, and I think the general consensus was, as you said, that Bromley have been treading water because they have had such a lead. Obviously, it's all right getting second, or sorry, it's all right getting in the playoffs, but you really have to get in those top two if you want to get through. Yeah, I think they went out and signed a goalkeeper this week. Obviously, they had Grant Smith sent off in midweek, and I said I thought they would rather than stick with the young lad Azeh. They went out and signed Lewis Thomas, formerly of the EFL with Forest Green, I believe. Yeah, he came in and played. But yeah, I do think Bromley are catchable. I think they probably will finish in the top three, but I think they're catchable.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're pretty assured, Barnet and Bromley, not mathematically, of course, but pretty assured of finishing somewhere in the playoffs. But having been second or third for so long, it would feel like a disappointment to them and their fans if they do drop out of the three. Perhaps the sides with the best chances of catching Bromley were Aldershot and Solihull Moors. And in that respect, they didn't do themselves any favours by drawing on Saturday. But I can say this, there was an awful lot of similes between the sides. They are, I think we'd all agree, the two most overachievers in the National League this season. Joe, we didn't fancy Solihull Moors at the start of the season, any of us really. A lot of people predicted them and Aldershot to be in the bottom four. And of course, both sides have been nowhere near it. It was an intriguing game. For a long time, it looked as if it might incredibly remain goalless. But both sides are shorn of six or seven key players at the moment. I think first choice starters, probably five from each squad. So it was one of those real tough days to try and get the result without your full ammunition. In truth, Aldershot shaded it with the most chances, particularly in the first half, and should have gone in ahead. But Solihull Moors are just so organised. They're so well oiled. And I know I've used it before, but it's the sum of the parts with Solihull Moors. They stayed in the game well, and they were actually a little bit unlucky on one or two occasions as well to sort of scrape and hit the post. And they did take the lead on with about 15 minutes to go. And it was just a flicked header on from a corner, Tavon Campbell. Stuck out a leg and poked it in. And that's what happens when you're in the rich vein of form that Tavon Campbell is in, 5-5 now, 15 for the season. In all honesty, it would have been very unjust on Aldershot to have lost that game. For large chunks of it, they were possibly the better side. And they got themselves level with a minute or so to go. There was a penalty. Lauren Tolledge pulled down in the penalty area. Stearman sent off. And Kean Harry scored his sixth penalty from six to leave the honours even at one all on the day. There were eight added minutes and Aldershot had a big chance with James Daly, which he headed over. But I don't know if either of you chaps have seen that. But Joe, I know you want to comment on the game and on the teams anyway. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I did expect probably a draw because they're two good sides that are in the playoffs playing well. I noticed that obviously Haddie Gander back in the Aldershot team just goes to show how I think that's one of the strengths that Tommy Wigginson's had this year is that everybody's remained a key part of the team, whether they're in the team or on the bench or out on loan. You know, everybody's got a part to play. Obviously, Richard Stearman sent off. He's having a bit of a He won't like me saying it, but he's having a bit of a shocker a couple of weeks. I saw him against Eastleigh and he was dragged off at half time, having conceded two pretty easy chances. And just a point on Aldershot, I'm looking at the table and they remain the only team in the top half who actually have a negative goal difference. So for a team that are fifth, that is mental.
No, that I mean, it's only minus one now, but I mean, a few weeks ago they were sat fifth on minus six, you know. So, Dickie loves that one. I know he often fondly remembers Eastleigh making the playoffs on a minus goal difference. I mean, realistically, if it comes down to goal difference, whatever points they share with any other team, Aldershot are going to lose a place. It's as simple as that. The one exception might be Halifax, who I think is a modest goal. Modest plus five or plus six. But yeah, it was slightly frustrating for both teams, probably. For Solihull, I think because they did take the lead, they were leading late on, and because I think it was Tyrese Shade who hit the woodwork twice. And for Aldershot, really, because they'd actually managed to dominate for some big chunks of that game. And I think Tommy Widdrington said, all told, on and off target, Aldershot had something like 22, 23 efforts on goal in the game. So they'd be disappointed, as prolific as they've been this season, not to get a second and not to get all 3 points. But huge plaudits to Andy Wing, terrifically organised Solihull Moors team. And they're very, very dogged. They're very hard to beat. And would you agree with that comment, Dickie, about they are really, truly a team that's the sum of its parts rather than full of superstars?
Yes, I would. There's been a bit of a talent drain away from Solihull in recent seasons. Again, it was that perhaps that failure to make the EFL when they lost in the playoff final does mean you're always vulnerable to players feeling that, perhaps they're not going to get another opportunity at that, and they get an offer from somewhere else, and off they go. But yeah, Andy Wing's done a tremendous job with him. It's far surpassed what I imagined. And I say, I was just looking at the lineups for that game yesterday, and it just shows you how much it has changed at Solihull Moors. But the one thing that hasn't really changed is, you know, the fact that they still are able to pick up results. And yeah, I don't think any side will particularly fancy meeting him in the playoffs. You wouldn't say that they're, you know, one of the outstanding candidates to be winning those. You know, I think there's still I still think it'd be Barnet and Bromley in second and third, and you've got to look at it as being one of those two. But I think even the fact that Solihull Moors are in the conversation at this stage of the season, bearing in mind where we thought they were going to be, is a major triumph, really.
Absolutely. So Solihull and Aldershot remain fourth and fifth. FC Halifax Downs, we mentioned, had their game postponed against Ebbsfleet. Consequently, they dropped to seventh. But then the teams starting Saturday in seventh and eighth place, I believe, were Altrincham and Gateshead. Gateshead had their noses put out of joint the last couple of weeks, just sitting outside of the playoff positions. But Joe, they're right back in there at the expense of Altrincham. And it just shows, doesn't it, who drop out of the playoffs, by the way. It just shows how big those head-to-heads can be when they swing in one direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they're going to get in the playoffs, Gateshead, then these close games against teams in and around them are the sorts of games that are going to get them into that top seven. I watched back some of the goals. I think Altrincham will be disappointed with some of the goals they gave away. I saw the goal that Marcus Denanga scored was a really really poor goal to give away. But yeah, Gateshead are a really, really good attacking side. And as Phil Parkinson said in his interview after, if you're not at it against Gateshead, then they can put three or four past you. And obviously, they put three past them in the end. I'm pleased for Kieran Evans. That might be his first goal for Gateshead. He was at Torquay last season, but he's doing really well at Gateshead. A goal for Kane Adom. He got the winner. We had him on our piece in the blog last week. It seems every player we've picked then goes and scores the next week. So if anybody wants to score next week, then hit us up.
Yeah, absolutely. So well done to Gateshead, right back in the picture, and Altrincham have to take their turn in the excuse me this week to drop out. One other team with a good, strong, realistic chance still of making the playoffs. Well, they would have been really frustrated on Saturday, and that's Oldham Athletic. They were held to a nil-nil draw away at Dagenham and just lost a little bit of ground. They're going to have to find some pretty good form in their final six games to keep up the pace required to make those playoffs. There then comes a 5-point gap to Rochdale, who are the best of the rest, and I'm sure would proudly say that mathematically they still have a chance of making the playoffs, but it would be certainly a slim one at that. They got a 1-0 win at home to Maidenhead, which leaves Maidenhead hovering precariously above the relegation zone. And it was Devante Rodney who's found a little bit of form of late who got that goal. Below Rochdale, and probably the first of two or three teams now that you feel are safe but won't trouble the playoff picture, Southend United, who were also involved in a goalless draw with Woking. And the one I really want to bring the plaudits to, and that's AFC Fylde, up to 49 points. Now, let's not forget, they were in the bottom four nearly all season. But yet again, Nick Horton on target for them in another home win. And it was a come from behind win, wasn't it, Joe, against Oxford City?
Yeah, big win for FC Fylde. The fact that they went behind and were behind after an hour, they'd have been disappointed because they'd have seen that as a game that they had to win, really, to keep them in the league. That sort of you don't have bankers in the National League, but that is one of your perhaps bankers. Really good for them to come from behind. A goal from Joe Wesley. He's done really well. A couple of goals on loan from Burnley. And then a goal from Nick Horton, as Dickie always makes reference to. He must have had his Superman cape rewashed this week. He's got a fantastic free kick. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's an absolute beauty. And yeah, big win for them. As for Oxford City, I just want to put a little bit on them. Obviously, disappointing season, a very hard season for them. They're stuck by Ross Jenkins. You know, they are part time, but they'll be back. You know, I think Ross Jenkins is a good manager, and they got lots of work to do in the summer, but they'll bounce back next year.
You talk about Nick Horton having a special cape, Joe. He is one of the truly special players, isn't he, in the National League? Certainly will be considered for the team of the season when we all come to think about that at some point. It got me thinking about something yesterday. Some stats given to me by Steve Gibbs from the official, I don't know, is it Y Scout or something or other on the National League. The three players in the National League who've had the most shots this season. Now, I've kind of given it away a little bit because we've just been talking about him, but Nick Horton was the second most shots in the National League, 134 prior to yesterday. Dickie, can you have a guess at who one of the other two are? And Joe, you get a guess as well. Dickie, you go first.
I'm going to stick with something that pops, just a name that popped into my head. Obviously, you know, he is high in the leading scorers. So if you don't shoot, you don't score. I'm going to go with Paul McCallum.
Yeah, good guess, good guess. Joe?
I was actually going to go with his teammate. I'm going to go Chris Maguire.
Okay. Well, Nick Horton is second in the list with 134 prior to yesterday. And Lauren Tolage is third with 125. And if you've watched Aldershot much, you'll see that he pulls the trigger three or four times a game, guaranteed. And obviously, he's got decent tally for the season. But the player in the National League who is far out on his own with the most shots in the National League this season is Chris Conn-Clarke of Altrincham. He was on 155 efforts on goal prior to yesterday's. And I think that's for 20 goals in all competitions. So this would firm up what we already knew and surmised, Joe, having watched Paul McCallum up close and personal in training on midweek in Swansea, that his ratio of taking chances is pretty exceptional, isn't it? Because he's not in that top three, but he has got the 34 goals.
Yeah, it's games, you know, more about efficiency rather than volume. Yeah, obviously he's not the sort of player, as we saw on Tuesday night with England C, that he's not the sort of person to make chances by himself. He needs them put on the end of his head. So, yeah, obviously good player, but yeah, I'm not surprised with Chris Conn-Clarke. Obviously a good team, aren't they? Altrincham and score a lot of goals, so, and a very good player.
Absolutely. And that'd probably be the most encouraging reason why Altrincham will still feel that they can get back into those playoffs after that setback against Gateshead. Right, we need to fly through the rest of the division a little bit. Otherwise, the National League's going to hog this podcast at the expense of the North and the South. So, a quick run through the other games. Chesterfield, of course, we didn't mention the detail, but they beat Boreham Wood 3-0, which leaves Boreham Wood for, I think, the first time. Certainly in the last month or so, actually in the relegation positions. That was always going to be a tough, tough game for Luke Garrard's team to get anything on Saturday, but they will be now fully focused on their remaining games to try and pick up the points they need to get to safety. Eastleigh are not safe yet, despite Paul Callum's 34 goals in all competitions. They drew 1-1 with Hartlepool. It was the aforementioned Chris Maguire who scored Eastleigh's equaliser after Joe Gray had put Hartlepool ahead in the first half. And the other game, Joe, we're not going to gloss over. One, because you were there, and two, because you picked up some audio. So take as much time as you like, as long as it's not more than 30 seconds. No, I'm only joking. Wealdstone against Kidderminster. Wealdstone, the better placed of the two, despite Kidderminster's improved form since Phil Brown came in. Take us away with that one.
Yeah, it was a really good game actually. Lots more chances than perhaps the scoreline suggests. And it was a bit of a tale of two halves really. Wealdstone far the better side in the first half. Max Kretschmar started the game really, really well. In virtually the thick of all of their quality going forward. Callum Cisse, he was given a start at right wing back. His first ever start in professional football. He signed recently from Tottenham Hotspur. He was brilliant. And Wealdstone were worthy leaders at the break. Goal from Mats Kretschmar, as we say. Lovely little finish in the down the back of the defender, and he ghosted in and smashed across goal. But Kidderminster, obviously, they must have been given a rousing team talk at half time from Phil Brown, because they came out with a new look. Certainly, Phil Brown came out with a new look. He got rid of his jacket, the tie was off, and they played really, really well and were deserving for a point. Ashley Hemmings, he got the goal. He played brilliantly. Funny enough, he started in a wing back role, and one of the analysts from Kidderminster on the media said, he said he's going to play wing back today. Wing back, really? I said, well, he's not a wing back. They moved him to left wing in the second half, and he was brilliant in the second half, having done nothing in the first. He got the goal, virtually a carbon copy of Max Kretschmar's, in off the post. Both keepers had two really good saves. A pick of those from Christian Dibble, when it looked as if it was going to go in. And yeah, it was a worthy one-all draw, I think. I think if any of the teams had won, then it would have been a little bit unfair. Wealdstone obviously now got a really important game on Friday against Oxford City, which they have to win. They'll be hoping that they can get their four players back from international duty, because they actually had four players not at the game yesterday: Dylan De Silva, Nathan Ferguson, and Taron Alarakia, as well as assistant Sam Cox, who are all on international duty. So yeah, good game, and a
They were
worthy
they,
draw.
yeah, and they were refused, of course, the right that they should have been given with three internationals away players. They were refused that right because they have so many games to play. They had to get on and play it. And in the end, of course, we might look at it from the outside looking in as a better point for Wealdstone than it was for Kidderminster. Why would we need to suppose whether or not it was a good point or two dropped for Wealdstone? When Joe caught up with two of their players after the game.
Because a little bit disappointed not to get 3 points, or happy with a point?
No, definitely disappointed not to get three. I thought we should have won the game in the first half. But obviously the wind and stuff like that plays a big factor, and we just couldn't get out of our half. I'm sure they'll be disappointed with a point as well, because it was an even game, but I think their keeper played really well, made a few good saves and kept them in it in the first half, so I guess we'll have to take a point in the end.
And you say, yeah, that Christian Dibble made some good saves in the second half.
Yeah.
You made a couple of important ones yourself. You must be pleased how you played.
Yeah, I don't know, I'm still disappointed with just drawing, but obviously I made a few saves, which is always nice. But obviously the main thing, I guess, it's another point closer to safety. We've just got to keep building on that.
And obviously you've come in to replace a goalkeeper that's gone to the EFL in Sam Howes. And speaking to all the people today, say that you've had a really, really good season. How do you feel it's been this year for you?
I've really enjoyed it. I think it's the most fun I've had, and the most I've enjoyed football since I was at Boston. I think for me to come here and get my confidence back, sort of restart my career again, it's been great, and really enjoyed it. As I said, best moment in my career since I was at Boston United. Really enjoyed it after a season where I sort of hated football last year, especially the first half of the season. I think I didn't want to talk about it, or I didn't want to go training or play matches. Hated every minute of it, but Stuart Maynard he brought me in and helped me fall in love with the game again. And obviously David Noble as well is coming in, the new gaffer. I just love football again.
And obviously it's really tight down near the bottom. What's the focus going into the remaining games? What's the sort of mindset?
Just got to pick up points and any way we can. I think we've got to be a bit more clinical in both boxes, to be fair. We've got to keep more clean sheets and we've got to score more goals. It's easier said than done, but we create more than enough chances.
Max, I asked the same question to Marcus. Are you disappointed you didn't get 3 points or happy with a point?
Well, it might be a mixed reaction of there. I think Kidderminster were much better than us second half and we could have maybe lost it. I think they hit the bar and had a few good chances, but obviously on the flip side we dominated first half and probably should have scored more than one goal in the first half. So yeah, it feels like 2 points dropped, if I'm being honest, off the back of obviously playing against 10 men, a quick turnaround from Bromley on Wednesday. So you look back at the week, it's a bit frustrating. We should have more points than just one, but it is a point against a team lower than us, so they haven't taken three off us, so we can move forward, I guess.
And your goal was a really, really good finish. Talk us through that goal.
Yeah, obviously I'm just playing as like a single number 10 now, so off normally a big man, whether it's Sean or Manny, so I've done that most of my career. So yeah, it was just a little drop down in the box, I think Manny scooped it and then just managed to take it a touch out of my feet, and it was a good left foot finish on my weaker side, to be fair, across the goalie.
And how has your role changed since David Noble's come in? Obviously you played quite a bit under Stuart Maynard, but how's your role changed now?
I think our go-to formation under Stuart was like a three at the back with a box in midfield, so two number 10s, and I kind of like to, with as a single number 10, just go where I want, go in the channel, especially in behind and things like that. So I think we're playing, you know, we're playing good football still, but I'm having that opportunity to run beyond the front men and pick up little scraps and things like that. And that's how I've always played, get the press going as well. And yeah, the chances are falling my way at the minute as well.
And you came off in the second half and I felt that Wealdstone probably lacked in midfield when you came off. Why do you think that was?
I'm not sure why I came off. Probably, I think there's a stigma around me that obviously I have been injury prone here and my legs were going, but I think I did 12.5k against Fylde when we beat them 2-1. And that was a very tiring game. And then obviously on the bench against Bromley, I think was off the back of that. So yeah, obviously, of course, every player wants to stay on. And I felt like I could have stayed on, but yeah, it is what it is, really.
And you no doubt looked at some of the scores. York 1, AFC Fylde 1. It's all getting very tight down there. You've been quite adamant on social media that you will stay up. Are you still confident of that?
Yeah, I think so. I think the games remaining have a mixture of teams in the top half and teams in the bottom half. 3 points are just so much more than one, it feels like, at this stage. So we could grab a win, you know, we've got Altrincham away, we could grab a win up there, and maybe an unexpected one, and all of a sudden it's looking rosy. But I think we're looking okay. Obviously, we've been talking about these games in hand, we've got, they are still to come. It's just going to be, we need those five players who have been on international duty to come back, strengthen us, and I think we'll be able to win two or three games, and that'll do enough for us, but obviously, it's not a given.
That was Max Kretschmar, a very experienced head in the National League, and he certainly talked like one as well. And, well, we're pleased for you, Joe. It was your third attempt to get to Grosvenor Vale to make what wasn't your commentary debut, because you've commentated alongside me a couple of times now, but nevertheless to catch up with Paul at Wealdstone. And I'm told that you were up on the gantry there, which I've seen from the other side, but never been up there. How's your head for heights? No vertigo, is there?
Yeah, I was more worried about the ladder and the fact that the stand might fall down. I was really odd little stand, really nice little club, really welcoming. It was almost going to be an early afternoon as well on the commentary. In the first half, sort of with 5 minutes to go, we had the biggest hail and rainstorm you've ever seen. And for the first 10 minutes of the second half, we didn't have any commentary, so the National League team was silent for the first 10 minutes, but back in the end.
What you're saying is, in that first 10 minutes, Joe, you didn't put a foot wrong, right?
No, I had a really good 10 minutes of commentary, and it was a great day. I've never seen a club so small have so many people stay afterwards for a drink. Yeah, a real good community club, and I hope they stay up. Talking yesterday about all their plans for new stadium, and hopefully they can stay up.
I would concur with that. Grosvenor Vale isn't ideal. It's not particularly fit for purpose for them, but they battle on, and that's a club of full of characters, and for me, one of the more popular clubs and one of the more likeable clubs in the National League. I'm glad you got the opportunity to visit them on Saturday. Right, high time we turned our attentions to the National League North. And funnily enough, I should have got my brother on because he was at King's Lynn against Tamworth yesterday, where I saw that Mr. Singh, Dickie, was on track for another one of those ridiculous amount of clean sheets, but he didn't get it.
No, he didn't. This was the televised game on TNT yesterday. There have obviously been games from all three divisions this weekend, presumably to time with the fact that it was designated non-league day yesterday as well. So really great to see them taking in a game from the north. And yeah, it did at one point look as if they turned up and they were going to see an archetypal Tamworth performance, so, you know, the template that served them well this season. They were leading through a Kyle Finn goal in the 46th minute. He's impressed for them this season. And yeah, Jaz Singh, his clean sheet, got so many of them now, he probably can spare a few, but he would want another one. That was spoiled in the 89th minute by an equaliser from Owen Devonport for King's Lynn. And valuable point for Lynn. You know, Tamworth, it's a point on the road. I'm sure beforehand they might have taken that one, but given how good they've been this season, I would imagine they're probably going into every game feeling that they can probably collect all 3 points. It does maintain their lead at the top of the division because their lead is just so substantial at the moment that even though they won and second place, they drew in second place, Gunthorpe won, it didn't really make that much of a dent in Tamworth's lead.
Yeah, still 11 points clear, as you say. Terrific goal difference, both of those clubs. Plus 41 for Tamworth and plus 38 for Scunthorpe. Well, Brackley Town sit proudly in third and they did what they've been doing for many, many years, the infamous 1-0 win.
Yeah, this was, again, almost a template Brackley Town performance. Obviously, it's different now with Gavin Cowan in charge there. Must throw in as well. Gavin Cowan has a podcast of his own, which I think centres around a lot of to do with the fact that he used to be at Shrewsbury Town and he has Dave Edwards and his former colleague Sam Aston on it. They actually ran a coach trip to this game yesterday and one of my former work colleagues went along and had a whale of a time. He said the game wasn't great, unfortunately, but he did see a Brackley victory. 1-0 for them, as I say, which is... almost as you come to expect, a goal from George Carline. He'd have been pleased for Chesterfield. Obviously, they're his former club and he's seen them promoted yesterday. He's moved on. Pastures knew a goal after just 6 minutes. And yeah, they then saw off the challenge from Alverton, which no doubt came through the air, given Billy Heath's team. But yeah, saw it off successfully and cemented themselves into third place in the north.
Now, the sides now in fourth and fifth place, Chorley and Boston, they met on Saturday. And, well, both have been in improved form of late and looking pretty good, Dickie, aren't they, for a playoff place. But it wasn't a case of gimme, gimme, gimme. It was a case of Jimmy, Jimmy, Jimmy.
See what he did there. Yes, it was, in fact, Jimmy Knowles, who scored his second hat-trick in third games. I saw another brilliant stat. There's always brilliant stats from Christian at Boston United Stats, if you follow him on X. This was the third consecutive Boston United game in which a hat-trick had been scored. And in the first of those three games, there were two hat-tricks, which was Kelsey Mooney getting four and Knowles himself getting three at Gloucester. Then Mooney got a hat-trick last week, and then Knowles has got a hat-trick this week. He kicked it off with a penalty in the 8th minute at Victory Park, and he had his hat-trick by half-time goal in the 30th and the 43rd minute. Also picked up from a mutual friend who I've made in the last 12 months or so that he actually used to teach drama to Jimmy Knowles when he was a schoolboy. So I don't know if Jimmy Knowles went down in the penalty area trying to win a penalty or anything yesterday and whether he can credit some of that to his drama skills. I hope not, because you know, we don't want to see that kind of thing, really, do we? But yeah, Boston on a terrific run of form at the moment. And as you say, Chorley just looking a bit vulnerable. A few weeks ago, I was thinking that Chorley were looking as if they had the potential to even take second place away from Scunthorpe. And they've dropped away from that now. So they'll want to get back on that horse fairly soon with playoffs just around the corner.
Yeah, Alfreton, as a result of that 1-0 defeat at Brackley, dropped to sixth. And then I think the National League North's heading for something similar, perhaps on the final day to what it had last season. there's a queue of clubs chasing those last couple of playoff places. The one that jumped into them on Saturday was one that might have taken a few people by surprise. It was Curzon Ashton, thanks to a 4-1 home victory against Banbury United. So not so much perhaps a result in not so much a surprise in the result in this game, Dickie, but just Curzon probably not one of the favourites in recent weeks to be in that playoff position.
No, I don't think they would have been. They have developed this tendency, which Luke, when he's been on the podcast, and I've probably referred to as a bit of a Curzon-y result, possibly a bit Tottenham-ish, really, in that they will go and get a fantastic result away from home against a contender and then chuck in a terrible result at home. Didn't do that yesterday. A 4-1 win over Banbury. Banbury in dreadful form, so it wasn't a surprise. I think that's Banbury's 7th defeat on the bounce, possibly their 8th. They're in serious trouble. There were goals from Isaac Sinclair yesterday. He got them on the mark. Hayden Campbell got the second. There was a goal from Alex Kenyon just before half time as well. Ben Beresford had got a goal back, so it was 3-1 at half time. But Stefan Moles, he came on board from Warrington in the close season. He's been a good signing for Curzon. He added the 4th. And a playoff place is looking a distinct possibility now for Craig Mahon's side.
Well, there's a pattern emerging here because the teams in 8th and 9th played each other as well, Chester and South Shields. In 8th, 9th, 10th and 11th, Chester, South Shields, Hereford and Spennymoor are separated by just 1 point, and they're all within 3 points maximum of the playoffs. So how did that one work out between Chester and South Shields, Dickie?
It was a win for South Shields, and if I was to ask who was the scorer, I'm sure Joe's face would light up when I say Paul Blackett scored again for Shields. Yes, a raised fist there from Joe, and a celebratory one, not threatening me or anything like that, just for the benefit of the listeners. Joe's not that kind of guy. Yes, a 1-0 win for them and a very disappointing result for Chester. I saw quite a degree of dissatisfaction yesterday on social media with Chester's performance and maybe some, probably the first time I've seen that much negative comment expressed towards Callum McIntyre, the manager. He's had I think this is his second season in charge, and he's certainly energised Chester last season. But I think having got to the playoffs last season and fallen a bit short, I think there was a feeling that perhaps they really needed to kick on this season. And you know, they haven't. They've lost momentum at just the wrong time. They are winless in 7. 5 of those are draws, admittedly, but with other teams behind them gaining momentum, it's looking like Chester could miss out, and that wouldn't be great for a club that, you know, admittedly, yes, they're fan-owned. Can we call them a big club? They have a big fan base. They have an expectant fan base. There is still a lot of engagement with that supporter-owned model at Chester, and you know, they kind of feel like they should be doing better. And so there's going to be a little bit of pressure on there. South Shields, great in their first season in the National League. That's their 3rd win in a row. And yeah, they've got a chance at it now. You mentioned Hereford, you mentioned Spennymoor. Hereford are just going in the wrong direction at slightly the wrong time, although they did have a 4-1 win yesterday over Farsley Celtic. I think this game has picked up some traction on social media, mostly for a what I'm sure was an unscripted reaction from the Farsley Celtic admin on X, who expressed some dissatisfaction with how much he paid to travel to Hereford to watch his team get tanked 4-1. So yeah, I'm not sure, though. I think there's going to be some interesting conversations had around the Citadel around that one, and whether somebody will be continuing in their role.
Jutting in on that one. I've seen it. I think you shared it yesterday, and I've seen it elsewhere on social media. It doesn't add up for me, because why would, if it was somebody from the Farsley media team that had his own private account and that account, why would he be talking about how much he'd paid to get in? Because presumably, Dickie, he would have been on a comp on the media access.
You would think so. And I suppose that's my thoughts. Similarly, I shared it with a couple of people last night, and we all had similar thoughts of, hang on a minute, something's not quite right here. So whether somebody's going to be able to employ the "I was hacked" or "I left my phone unattended" defence in this one, I don't know. I mean, look, let's hope that, you know, nobody at Farsley decides to throw the baby out the bathwater here, because, you know, if it is one of your volunteers, yeah, they were unhappy, admittedly, but at the same time, these people help, you know, to make keep your club going, such like. So let's hope that, you know, there's nothing like that. I was just going to talk about momentum and talk about people heading in just the wrong direction away from the playoffs, just as the playoffs are coming into view. One team that's not doing that, Spennymoor Town. Graham Lee has gone into Spennymoor Town and he has overhauled things. There's not too many familiar faces in that Spennymoor side from the last two or three years now. Glenn Taylor was only a substitute yesterday. I don't know whether that's related to form, related to injury.
He scored yeah. a goal. Glenn Taylor's back.
Yeah, he's not been on target for a little while, but they've been getting lots of contributions from Rob Ramshaw. He's been there a long time. Will Harris has been a big contributor for them as well. They have now won 8 of their last 9 games. The other was a draw away at Chester. And all of a sudden, you'd think if Spennymoor could sneak into those playoff positions, you wouldn't fancy facing them because they've got that M word behind them, momentum.
Absolutely. I want to flip back to that Hereford game just for a couple of reasons. One, because there were 4 different goal scorers and we love that. So Akeek or Akeeke, Phillips, Alex Babos, and for me, the best name in the National League all season, Temi Tope, Ayoluwa, Obadeyi. Hereford fans, do you have a song for him? So that's the playoff chasing sides in the National League North. And Warrington, Town and Scarborough both have 58 points, and mathematically they're not out of it yet, but they're going to need some pretty consistent form over the final weeks of the season to get there. And prior to yesterday, of course, Warrington might have been fancying their chances a little bit more, but of course they did go down 2-0 to Scunthorpe and had James Harris sent off in that one. And what about the other of those two sides, Scarborough? They did a little bit better on Saturday, didn't they, Dickie?
Yeah, they did. Scarborough have been in desperate need of a result to try and turn around what's been a pretty stinking run since Christmas. I think almost related to that time around when they had to replay that FA Cup game that they had against Forest Green Rovers. And then I think possibly things have, I don't know, a bit of a hangover that things have gone downhill for them. But they came through yesterday. They had goals from Finn Barnes. I think he's on loan from York City. And Alex Wiles in a 2-0 win away at Warrington. Looking down here, that was their first win since a victory at Blyth on the 23rd of January. So that's 2 months without a win for Scarborough. And when they were eyeing a playoff place, dare I say it, that's just not good enough. But, you know, I'm sure they're not going to be, you know, throwing the baby out by the bathwater. Jonathan Greening's done a great job there. He'll be given a chance to rebuild things over the summer, I would think. But yeah, Scarborough not going up, not going down. That'll be a bit disappointment because they missed out on the playoffs on the last day last season. And again, I think they were one of those sides that were hoping could kick on and feature in the playoffs this season.
Joe, just to give Dickie a wee rest, because we've been working hard the last 10, 15 minutes or so, looking at the bottom end of the National League North, we know that Bishop Stortford were relegated last week, and it may not be too long after the defeats we've already talked about for Banbury and Gloucester, who are 11 and 9 points adrift. But the side that continues to fight hard, they are still in the relegation places. But a terrific win for them against another side that's been fighting the drop all season, Darlington. Rushall Olympic came through 3-2 winners in that one. And a bizarre occurring in that match. I don't know if you noticed, but all 5 goals scored in the first half.
Yeah, and 4 of those goals within sort of 15 minutes or so from each other. And yeah, a massive win for Rushall. Obviously, as you say, Darlington have been better under their new manager, Steve Watson. And if Russia were going to keep pace, they really needed to get something from that one yesterday. So the fact that they managed to get all 3 points, massive win. You know, we talk about 6 pointers at this point in the season. That's certainly one of those. And it keeps them in a good position to try and get out of it. And looking at it, obviously, they've got a game in hand. So they're only 2 points behind. So it's now in Russia's hands, 5 games to go, or 6 games to go for them, 5 games for Darlington. So it's going to be close. I've got a sneaky feeling that both of them might get out of it. And that Farsley will drop into it. I don't know what you think, Dickie?
Again, when we're talking about momentum, you look at Farsley, there's only a couple of wins, three this calendar year so far. I think they're winless in something like their last seven, four defeats in a row as well. So they are losing momentum at this crucial time. Rushall, again, they seem to deal in wins or losses and not very much in between. And that can be absolutely critical at this point of the season because, you know, we speak about you can go on a little unbeaten run, but if you don't win games in that one, it's not that much use to you. And Rushall did it again yesterday. two goals from Ronan Marr. I think he's on loan from Walsall. There was then a goal from Owen Farmer. I think he's on loan to the Wolverhampton Wanderers. They made good use of the local loan market in the West Midlands Black Country area. Rushall have two from Cedric Main. I think he's on loan from York to Darlington as well. So it was, the Lone Rangers were on target yesterday in some kind of a shootout at Dales Lane. And Rushall triumph.
Yeah, a question of beg, borrow, or steal, the players you need to survive. Some teams that are just above those we've just mentioned and could have 3 points would have really made them feel that they were much closer to safety, but they all ended up drawing. Southport, in rather bizarre circumstances, they went behind in the 20th minute to Buxton. And Andriushi, how do you say that? Anyway, his first name was Ben. He gave them the lead. Sorry, Buxton fans. Lloyd McGoldrick equalised for Southport on 36 minutes, and then Ben scored again in on 47. But in the 90th minute, three things happened according to the stats. Most importantly, Bennett got an equaliser and a point for Southport, but Luke Burgess and Marcus Carver both sent off as well on 90 or added time. So it would be disappointing, Dickie, for Buxton throwing away that lead late on that would have pulled them closer to safety. But while we're on Buxton, there was some news coming out of the Buxton camp this week.
Yes, there was. Manager Craig Elliott confirmed, I think it was on Friday, that although he will be the manager for the remainder of the season, he will then step down. And I'm guessing this is to give Buxton the maximum opportunity to find somebody else to take this forward. I was speaking to somebody yesterday who said to me he had an idea that Buxton may be looking at moving either to a hybrid or a full-time model next season. That doesn't necessarily fit in with his job as a university lecturer, Craig Elliott, and obviously that takes precedence for him, and he doesn't want to make a choice between the roles, so he's stepping aside very shortly, and it gives Buxton a chance to find the man or woman that will take them forward. Now that'd be a turn up, wouldn't it? See that happening at Buxton, but no. It will be interesting to see who they go for. They did make a heavy investment a couple of seasons ago when they brought Jamie Vermiglio in, and on the playing side, didn't really work out. But looks like they might be girding their loins and gearing up for another go at it.
Absolutely. The other game we referred to that was a draw, with two sides not quite yet mathematically safe. Peterborough Sports at home to Blyth Spartans, who took the lead twice in the match through Gardiner. Peterborough Sports levelling through Jarvis, and then another late equaliser from Tutti in 90th minute, despite playing the last 15 minutes without Ryan Fryatt and being down to 10 men. So that could be deemed as a pretty decent point for Peterborough Sports, whose form in the last couple of months has really led them to safety. They just need to be careful that they don't slip back in over the final weeks there. No, they've hopefully brought in the right tools to do the job. All right, then, we haven't got too much time left today. So, Joe, we're going to be on speed. We're going to be speedsters here on the National League South. What happened at the top end? Yeovil have been in some indifferent form of late, haven't they? But I think they got back to winning ways on Saturday.
Yeah, they did. They had a tough game. Their Braintree away, who have been on a fantastic run of form in the league, but it was a win for Yeovil. Such has been the way of late. They struggled to score, and it was only a 1-0 win for them. But they'll take any win at this rate just to get them over the line. Frank Nibell, obviously, with the goal, and yeah, they seem to be within touching distance now. Obviously, got Torquay on Friday, and they'll be hoping certainly to put the icing on the cake at home.
Absolutely. Chelmsford continue to push closest to Yeovil, just 7 points behind now, albeit having played a game more. And my goodness me, they left it late. Taunton Town, two up after 20 minutes through Bell and Grimes. Francis pulled a goal back for Chelmsford in the first half. But that was it, 2-1 Taunton going into the 90th minute until that man turned up again, Joe. Not once, but twice.
Yeah, it was rough on Taunton Town, and quite literally, Charlie Ruff. He's been in brilliant form this season. He got both goals. Having seen that they'd scored an equaliser, that it finished 2-2, but was only then looking to see that they'd actually managed to get a winner. So a really disappointing afternoon for Taunton. That would have been a really useful point against a good side. But Chelmsford, they've got a way of winning games, especially on the road, and they've done it again.
Yeah. Well, Hampton and Richmond were probably best placed to try and take advantage of Braintree's 1-0 home defeat to Yeovil. But they couldn't get it done either because they lost by 1-0. At Torquay United, Joe. Torquay United in home win shocker. Been a difficult few weeks, of course, for your club, but they got the job done thanks to a first-half penalty.
Yeah, I had to refresh the video printer. I thought there'd been a mistake when I saw that Torquay had won 1-0. But they did, and it was a goal from that man, Asa Hall, ever reliable. In a new role this week, I'm sure if you were to see Asa Hall's name on the team sheet, then you would have thought he'd be the marauding central midfielder that he is, getting on the end of crosses. But no, in a new role by Aaron Downs, playing as a sweeper, as a centre-back, and he got the goal, the all-important goal for Torquay. And yeah, really, really good win, especially given the other results. A really big win for trying to keep them clear of the drop zone. By all accounts, Hampton, huffed and puffed, didn't really offer a great deal going forward. It was a game that probably lacked quality in truth. 3,000 at Torquay on Saturday. That's the highest attendance of any game at Step 2. I don't know how many Worthing had. On the telly, as we'll come on to talk about them, but certainly on Saturday they had the most at Step 2, and yeah, massive win for Torquay.
Maidstone kept up their strong playoff push with a 1-0 win against Western Supermare, the goal coming from Greenwich just past the hour mark. And below them in the table, Dickie, I think, can bring us right up to speed with this one, because he just commented in the group that as we're recording on Sunday afternoon, Worthing are playing Bath on TNT Sports. Great to see coverage of Step 2. And how's that one ended, Dickie, or is it still going?
Yeah, a 2-2 draw between Worthing and Bath this afternoon. Again, another TNT Sports game. Our friend Scott Davis was on commentary, I think, as well, or punditry duties. Nice to see him there as well. Scott Wilson, he's been a regular finder of the target this season for Bath. He put them ahead. That was levelled by Danny Cashman before half-time. Jordan Dyer put Bath into a 2-1 lead, but Cashman again, cashing in, 79th minute goal, two each, and sounded like an entertaining game for the TNT Sports viewers.
So perhaps a better point there for Worthing than Bath, because Worthing remain in sixth place and Bath remain outside the playoffs in ninth, 4 points behind them. Sandwiched in between those two clubs are Aveley and St Albans. And whilst St Albans remain in a playoff place as we record this, Aveley did close the gap on them yesterday, Joe, didn't they? They still won't give up that playoff fight, will they?
No, they're sticking around. And Danny Scopes continues to do a fantastic job. He's certainly got to be in the reckoning for manager of the season. And yeah, they came from behind in that game. Sean Jeffers, who else? He got himself on the score sheet in the second half before 2 goals in 6 minutes. First from Eze, second from Coleman. Turned the game around within 6 minutes. And yeah, a massive win for Aveley. And as we've said before on this with all the other leagues, if you're going to get in the playoffs, you're going to have to beat the teams around you. And that's a massive 3 points for them maintaining their chances of finishing in the playoffs.
Absolutely. Another side that have been in fantastic form of late, and they're really starting to close in on the playoffs themselves. They're just 3 points away now, and that's Farnborough. They trailed early on yesterday at Dover, Dembele with the 14th-minute goal. But a double from Aaron Cool and one from Ricky Holmes gave Farnborough a 3-1 win. And they'll have been delighted looking at the league table after that game. Not so within the next 24 hours when it became clear that Mark White has recalled Aaron Cool from Farnborough to bolster his playing squad at Dorking as they fight for survival over the final six games of the season. We mentioned Scotty Davis a short while ago doing his punditry duties at Worthing. On Saturday, they defended that long unbeaten home run. And again, it looked like it was going against Eastbourne Borough, who've got their own fight for their lives. They led for a ridiculous 78 minutes of that game, didn't they, Joe? Moussa Diarra, a well-known name at National League level, giving them an early lead. But Leon Chambers Parillon got them parallel in the 80th minute. Parillon, parallel. Dickie, I can see he's frowning. He doesn't like that one. Maybe we'll cross that one out. But yeah, it ended 1-1 there, and not probably the 3 points that Slough were looking for, Joe. But nevertheless, they kept that long unbeaten home run going.
Yeah, they did. You know, really impressive record as well. And Freespawn, you know, they need wins now if they're going to pull themselves out of trouble. So points not really enough. But yeah, Leon Chambers Parillon, he got the goal. I think he signed a new contract a couple of months ago after impressing in the first half of the season. And yeah, good, better point probably in the end for Slough.
Chippenham and Tunbridge will both certainly mathematically still have an outside chance of the playoffs. And they both got their business done on Saturday. Chippenham beating Welling United 4-1. Despite Welling taking a 10th-minute lead, Joe, and Chippenham didn't get there first until the 66th minute. They really went to town in the end, though.
Yeah, they've been on a really good run of form under Gary Horgan, and I was really impressed with them when I watched them at Hewish Park last week. And yeah, good win for them against a Welling team that have been in good form themselves. Luke Haynes with a goal, a double from Tyreek Johnson, and a goal from Tom Owen Evans, obviously formerly of Kidderminster and Hereford, that Dickie will have seen play in the north. And yeah, really good win for them. And they're having a really good finish to the season. So even if they don't get in the playoffs, they'll be really pleased.
Flipping our attention to the other end, we've already mentioned that Taunton Town, one of the two sides that have got a significant amount of games still to play, they succumbed 3-2 at home. But Truro City, who still, even right now, have 12 games to play, unfortunately, Joe, are no nearer to safety, are they? Can they go the distance with these remaining games they've got to fit in a month? Well, unfortunately, they couldn't go the distance on Saturday. They did take a lead after 65 minutes through Hines, but with just 6 minutes left, Tunbridge turned the match on its head.
Yeah, and I think that's what Paul Woodton would be really disappointed with, the fact that they, you know, had the lead for so long to get it back to 1-1. You know, the focus is just don't lose the game, and for them to lose it, that's a real killer for them. Obviously, they've done a lot of travelling from Gloucester for their home games to Tonbridge for an away game. And yeah, they'll be really disappointed with that. But you know, you've got to, as you said, you've got to get wins now, and probably Truro were pushing for a win at 1-1 rather than just keeping for a point.
Dartford in the bottom four, but only a point adrift, and they got themselves a point on Saturday, Joe, against Hemel. A Paul Rooney goal in the second half, equalising Michael Folivy's 34th minute goal for Hemel Hempstead. As for Havant Waterlooville, it may be a matter now of when, not if, they remain second bottom, and very, very unlikely to survive the drop now. And they were seen off by Weymouth.
Yeah, and with Weymouth, it's virtually a case every week of how many they're going to score and can they score more than they concede, because they're a really high-scoring team. They just can't keep them out. But they managed to keep enough out on Saturday. Four goals, four individual scorers. Luke would like that one on edit. Goals from Bearish and Goodship, former Torquay man O'Connell, and Ezio Torre finishing it off in style for them. And yeah, I think Weymouth have had a good season, all things considered, given their budget and where they are in the league at this stage. I think they've done all right.
So looking ahead then to the midweek action, Taunton Town will be in action again on Monday night, who take on Scotty. Busy couple of days for Scotty Davis. He's down at Worthing, and now he's on some sort of transport across to Taunton for tomorrow, where Slough will go. And then on Tuesday evening, there are a few more matches in the National League South, two to be precise. Truro go again at home to Dartford. That's a big one, Joe, in terms of the battles for the two clubs. And then Western Supermare take on Farnborough, who could go level on points with the playoff positions on Tuesday. Are you getting along to any of those games, sir?
I'm not. I was going to go to Taunton. I'm saving myself for a bumper clash on Easter Friday, as well. I took my two teams. That will annoy a couple of people. Go head to head. Yeovil hosting Torquay at Hewish Park on Friday.
And Dickie, four games in the National League North. I don't think there's any doubt about the key one, is it? Spennymoor Town chasing those playoffs at home to Scunthorpe.
Yeah, that does look like the big one. It's Scunthorpe's game in hand over Tamworth, although how valuable it is in that chase, I don't know. I think it's a vain chase now, to be perfectly honest. I think that's more about Scunthorpe making sure that they finish in second place and secure the best possible playoff position that they can. But yeah, for Spennymoor, absolutely nothing to lose on a tremendous run. And at home, they won't make it easy for Scunthorpe. I'll have my eyes on that one, definitely.
In the National League, Solihull Moors will have the opportunity to close in on Bromley with a home match, but they'll have tough opponents in the shape of Kev Myers, Southend United. There's a Northeast derby, if you want to call it that. Gateshead at home to Hartlepool. Gateshead 2 can cement their playoff position. And Altrincham can try and jump back into the playoffs as they take on Wealdstone up at Moss Lane. That's just about it. Listeners, forgive us if we've not been at our tip-top best today. We've all got cracking excuses, which we won't bore you with, but it might just be one pod too many this week. We've completed our hat-trick, and there's only one thing left to say other than thanks to you guys. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Dickie.
You're welcome. Good to
see you. Cheers, guys. Waving frantically at me in the background. Yeah, the only other thing to say is, Luke, do the best edit you can and play the theme tune.